God was not surprised by anything that happened. He knows that we're humans and not perfect. And so he gives us the roadmap to have what he wants for us, which is land, descendants, relationship. Let's be honest. He gives Adam the covenant that does talk about land, relationship, and descendants. We know in hindsight, the promise was don't do this or, and we as Christians focus on the spiritual death that occurred, but also don't forget they were removed from the garden. So there was a land element here and their descendants certainly were impacted by this covenant and their response to it.
Hello again, and thanks for joining us for part two of our covenantal trek through the Pentateuch. If you've missed the first part of this series or want to re-listen, head to our website studywithfriends.org and search Pentateuch. While you're there, you can get the homework to follow along, or you can meet any of the ladies involved in our ministry. If you're on the go, you can also listen to us on your favorite streaming app like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Plus, be sure to check us out on YouTube. Now, let's dive into part two.
Any reflections as we springboard into Genesis? I asked, reflect on the careful planning God executed as he rolled out the plan for Israel.
When we were talking about his covenant with Noah, it struck me that basically, God was starting over again, destroying evil and starting over with Noah and his family. And this theme of descendants and the promise, the covenant of I'll never destroy the entire earth again by a flood, is God always preserves a remnant of his people. Mm-hmm. And from there, he will continue to have a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And have them have descendants. Mm-hmm. And work toward a land.
Mm-hmm. We actually see it come up again with a golden calf. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, you guys, but okay, I'm going to hold a few, but you guys, right?
It's all throughout.
Yeah, so that's a great observation because his preservation of the descendants, we see it in Exodus as well. But, you know, it's sort of remarkable that not only did he protect the descendants in their oppression in Egypt, but they were multiplied to such a degree that they became a threat. So very great observation. Thanks for casting that vision. Anything else as we move into the text?
Any other observation? It just always amazes me that God, even before he created the earth, this whole plan was thought out. And, you know, he spoke, you know, light into being through Jesus, you know, Armageddon, like the whole thing.
I know.
Sorry, I'll play
it
down.
Always, yeah. I'm in awe of that too.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I think you and I did the revelation.
Good, you know?
Yes.
Yeah,
that his plan was good the whole time.
Yeah.
Did you and I do the revelation study
together?
Yeah. I remember when I was studying Revelation, I sort of had that moment of it washed over me how many parallels there were between Revelation and the garden, Revelation and Genesis. And I remember thinking, like an idiot, I'm going to be transparent. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, it's like it was perfectly planned.
right.
I'm like, it's like he knew where he was going from the very beginning. And the reason that I am in awe of that is because, like, if you've ever tried to even write something that's cohesive or tell a story that makes sense, it's so hard to make sure that where you end is where, you know what I mean? Like, that there's a logical thing. And it was so tightly connected. I am often in awe of that, too.
Many people would think Revelation is not logical.
Yeah, but I guess it was a really good study that we did because the teacher that we had, I was really able to see that in such a clear way, and I had never really seen it before.
Right.
I think it's good that we're awestruck. I think that's what he wants.
Oh, you know? For sure.
I certainly don't want to stop ever being awestruck by his perfect planning, but yes. And that actually gives us a moment to look at what I had said before as well, which is even though the covenants don't, we have the covenant of works in the garden. We're going to deal with that in just a minute. But beyond that, the other covenants don't come in until Noah and then Abraham and then David. So they come in at later iterations and you say, how do you apply those covenants in hindsight? That seems anachronistic. But the truth is God is timeless and his plan is the same from all time. And so we can see, as I've said, by, you know, at its heart, the creation story is a story about land, right, descendants, and relationship. So you can see it in hindsight, even though he didn't formalize that covenant until later in the Bible with his beloved patriarchs. You can see, once he formalizes it, you can see it was the plan all along. And I did run the parallel to that in Christ. You know, now that we are, you know, aware of Christ, we can look back and see, oh, it was about Christ the whole time. So,
you can see what's important to God, like, mm-hmm, it's these common themes. And then, therefore, because we're creating God's image, it's what's at our heart, too, is we need the land, we need descendants, mm-hmm, we need this relationship with God. And so you see it through all time woven, because, mm-hmm, that's God's priority, and it's therefore really what our priority should
be. And even though things occur that take them out of the land, he miraculously gets them back to where he intended them to be. And so, yeah, we
just
see
like
that
we stray,
that's important,
and he keeps
to
bringing,
yep,
us back.
Yep, that's great. Yep. Very good parallel. Thank you. Okay, so let's do it. The covenant of works. Just for a minute. Okay, so Marilyn, will you read? Okay, so let me say this. I'm going to say, I struggled with whether I should include this or not, because the covenant of works confuses people a lot. Not everybody believes that this is truly a covenant, but I included it for two reasons. One, because a study on the covenants would be conspicuous. It would be conspicuous by its absence if I hadn't included it. And so for me, if something's conspicuous by its absence, for me, that seems like the teacher or the preacher is afraid of it. And I didn't want it to come across like I was afraid of looking at that, because I don't think there's any piece of God's word that we should be afraid to tackle. Because if we just beg him for understanding, he'll help us understand it. He's promised that, Jeremiah 33:3. And so I wanted to include it for that reason. And also, I think it's a really important understanding between works and grace. So we're going to try to unpack that a little bit, but not spend a ton of time on it so that we can manage the clock. Okay, so Marilyn's going to read what some people call the covenant of works, which happened in the garden. I'm going to give you a little bit on it. You can throw me some questions. I'll do my best with them. And then we're going to run away from it. Let's be honest.
Okay. The first covenant that occurs in the Bible is sometimes called the covenant of works. Genesis 2:16-17 says, "You may surely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." That was Genesis 2:16-17. R.C. Sproul explains it best.
Oh, you don't have to do that.
Okay.
Just read the covenant. We don't want to go through the whole, although R.C. Sproul does explain it best. So don't believe me, believe him. So I will sum up what he's explaining. And let me tell you another reason I think it's important to look at the covenant of works is because it lays a couple of foundational principles in the idea of covenant. First, if God says something's going to happen, it's going to happen. And so that's the unconditional nature of anything that he ever says to a people group or to a patriarch. He did say this to one of his patriarchs, which was Adam. And so it's a promise. I mean, we think of promise differently than regular conversation, but because of the nature of God, anything he says is a promise, right? Anything he says is true, and it will be fulfilled, period, full stop. So I want to lift that up. And also, there's an element of this covenant that we want to kind of understand through the other several covenants, which is, if you do this, then this will happen. And that's the conditional nature of God's relationship with us. And we talked a little bit about the conditional and unconditional relationship with God. God was not surprised by anything that happened. Where we read anything in the Bible, God was not surprised by this. He knows that we're humans and not perfect. And so he gives us the roadmap to have what he wants for us, which is land, descendants, relationship, He gives Israel, he gives Adam, let's be honest, this is a covenant that does talk about land, relationship, and descendants. We know in hindsight, the promise was, don't do this, or, and we as Christians focus on the spiritual death that occurred, and the sin and the fall, and that's a huge part of this passage. But also don't forget, they were removed from the garden. So there was a land element here, and their descendants certainly were impacted by this covenant and their response to it. Mm-hmm. And their relationship with God was certainly impacted by their response to this covenant. So for sure, land descendants and relationship are in here. Do you agree with what I'm saying, do you think I'm full of baloney? Yeah. Okay. Yep. So every piece of the, even though it's not spelled out, which by the way, each successive covenant really spells it out better. So this one, it's harder to maybe lift up, but it's in there. And then Noahic, and then Abrahamic, Mosaic, and then surely David's covenant, really. They take up more real estate in the Bible. Like, you know, the earlier ones are just a couple lines. And then with Davidic, he's like, listen, here's exactly how this is going to work. And so we go backwards and we say, oh, as he began to unpack that theme, can we see it all throughout the covenants? We definitely can. Please tell me if you think I'm full of baloney.
And what's ironic is this is so short, and yet it blew up everything when they didn't mm-hmm. keep this. Mm-hmm. Sin entered the world, and all of it broke loose.
Yeah. And so I guess even though we call this the covenant of works, what God was saying was, if you do this, then this will happen. If you don't do this, then this will happen. And that's an element that's true in all the covenants. So in some ways, there is that conditional. That's why, but I hate the word works because it does make people think, oh, then like, in order to have a relationship with God, do I have to work for that? And we have to just really say no authoritatively to that because of Christ. And Paul does a great job with this. He reminds us everyone sins and falls short of the glory of God. None of us are going to achieve salvation by work. Right. And in the garden, that's not what was happening. They were already in relationship. And he was explaining to them the way you stay in relationship is to keep things exactly as I've laid them out and respect the boundaries that I've set for you. That's one of the reasons I wish I could call it something else, but I'm not the boss of what scholars call that. And so, I think there's a reason that they want to compare and contrast works to grace. Mm-hmm. And so I guess we'll do our best. I think maybe a little bit as we go forward, that'll be a little bit more clear too. But the covenants that occur after, I mean, I would certainly say this covenant was also full of grace because by keeping it, by existing in the garden, that was full of grace. Right. The relationship that he would walk with them in the garden, like, that is full of grace. I just think they didn't recognize that it was full of grace because, you know, you take advantage, mm-hmm. you know. When you grow up in a family and then you go to college and you're like, wait a minute, not every family is like my family. So you don't recognize what you have until you see something different, and certainly that's a human experience. So,
can I just say, it makes me think of in the New Testament where Jesus says, you know, if you love me, you will obey my commandments. So this, you know, the way that they could show God in the garden their love for him is to obey this one, mm-hmm. this only one command. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, and I appreciate your explanation because it's really where I stumbled was calling it the covenant of works.
Yeah.
Because to me, I would agree that it's completely grace-filled already. I mean, he gives them mm-hmm. the land, mm-hmm. the relationship. Mm-hmm. The relation, you know, the
yeah,
the
it's
family,
baked
right,
into the creation narrative.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I really stumbled with calling it works, and my only thing that I came down to was it called works because they hadn't fallen yet, but he still graced them mm-hmm. even before. So that was really, I really appreciate the way that you sort of worked into it because I read some of it and how we sort of talked on Thursday where there were times where you were like, I was sort of like this. Mm-hmm. Like,
it doesn't make sense. And I'm glad you always say that. Like, if it doesn't make sense to you, poke at it.
Yeah.
Because this is where we want to unpack that. I don't have all the answers, but we'll do our best.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, you know, we have to have a faith-filled reading of any text. So our faith informs how we read it. And so we say, that doesn't, the way I'm reading it or the way I'm understanding it doesn't seem to fit with the character of God that I see everywhere else in the Bible. So how do I reconcile that? And that's why I said, Jeremiah 33:3 says, call to me and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know. I lean on that a lot. Because there are so many great and unsearchable things I do not know. And he's got to show them to me by his mercy and grace. I can't get there on my own. It's the Holy Spirit. And sometimes he chooses. Sometimes I just have to lay it down and move on. I mean, I remember when I first read Judges, I did not understand it in the big picture context. And I was like, what is happening in this book? Because at that time, I was like, isn't Israel always his chosen people? Why are they behaving this way? And why is he condoning it? And I had just had it all wrong. We did a whole study on Judges. So, and I think that needs to be done because Judges is a hot mess. Yeah. And if you don't understand the context of it, but it also falls in the context of this whole narrative. Okay, so do we feel satisfied? And I mean, obviously, the covenant of works is something I'm probably going to link the R.C. Sproul explanation because he'll explain it better than I ever could anyway. So I'll put
but
that
I think the
I'll
beauty
link that on
of
the
it
page.
Is recognizing and understanding that what it does is it rings true with the other covenants.
Yep.
And I think, and maybe that's where kind of my issue came from is this one was works and this one was grace. Mm-hmm. And yet that's not the pattern.
And the truth is there's an element of works and grace in right. all of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what we were talking about before, yeah. that there's a conditional and unconditional yep. element in all of them. And the truth is that's how it has to be. When we think about the nature of God, his promises will come to pass, mm-hmm. period. B, the nature of humans, we're always going to fall short. And God knows that. But he uses our, when we are on the mountaintop and when we're in the valley, he uses that as witness to people around us. In the same way that he used that in Israel's life to witness to the nations around them, he uses it in our lives to witness to the people around us too. And so the conditional nature of it, when we stop experiencing the spiritual promised land in the abundant way that Christ has in mind for us to do, that's something that people around us can see and potentially learn from if we can be vulnerable enough to share what's happening in our lives.
And there is blessing when we do successfully obey, you mm-hmm. know, some, you know, mm-hmm. not material necessarily, but, you know, there is.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe one of the, if I'm honest, maybe one of the ways that's most clear is in my home. So I think that my family sees when I am spending time in the Word and when I am paying attention to my relationship as a priority, the rest of my life shows evidence of that. Yeah. And when I'm not, it doesn't. And so here again, these three things are completely interwoven. Home, like we talked about before, this land/home/place where I belong. So this is my home, and this is where I'm experiencing externally and internally my spiritual promised land of, you know, where it's being played out. I mean, let's be honest, like our family sees us without the mask on, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, we may successfully put the mask on when we leave the house, but you can't keep it on all the time inside the house. And so there's a transparency there, and aren't those our descendants? And even if you don't have kids, there's this is another thing I want to say. There's a spiritual descendance. You may be a descendant of someone who's not your blood spiritually. I'm looking at Marilyn.
The childless one.
No, I'm looking at you because I feel like I am a descendant of you. I said on the last recording, you're my church mom. You're a spiritual parent figure to me. So for me, you know, we talk about this a little bit more in a moment, but you are a descendant spiritually of somebody, and you have spiritual descendants. And that is really, of course, you hope your kids are part of that story, but they're not all of the story. They shouldn't be if we're doing what Christ asked us to do, which is live out our faith and help others to come to Christ, right? So that element of descendants and then also certainly relationship with God, it's, again, so tightly woven. It's a little harder to extract in our personal lives, but as important to do.
If I may, and, mm-hmm. and I don't want to go too far off tangent, but I want to sort of thinking of outside of this Christian box. And because you're just making me think of all of these things, and something that's so prevalent in our society right now is this fitting in mm-hmm. moment, right? So, and I remember being younger and being not the norm, and my children aren't the norm. My children aren't sports children, so they're not the norm, right? And there's this element of desperately desiring to fit sure. in. And what are we willing to do in order to fit in? So it's just interesting how even those who don't follow Christ, right? Like, we want a place where we belong. It's natural. It's inherent in our nature to want a land and a people and something to worship. Mm-hmm. And I just think as we sort of walk out of this sort of section, or if you're listening or watching or anything, walking out of this section, recognizing that we all have that. Mm-hmm. And then what does being a Christian look like that can make it welcoming mm-hmm. to others that don't have necessarily mm-hmm. a home and a people to belong to?
That's great.
And how can we make that look beautiful attractive. In the way that Jesus mm-hmm. wants us to, mm-hmm. to other people? Where sometimes we're going, oh, you fit in that home, so you don't fit in my home. And we all get clicky. And so it just made me just think of that. Because a lot of stuff I read lately, it says, I belonged in that community. And then I was pulled out of that community. So we want to, how can we fit in and have them feel part of our family?
You're very good at this.
Going off topic? I am. I'm super good at going off topic.
No, you're good at helping to keep, to help us to raise out facets that maybe we weren't thinking about before. So thanks for that. Do you experience what I experience, which is maybe the best job of me making it attractive is being transparent about my own downfalls and my own yeah. crud.
Yes.
Yeah, I hate that part.
Yeah. Because I didn't always agree with that. I was very much someone who mm-hmm,
me too.
Wanted to put my best foot forward.
Like as if you were going to shame Christ yes. if you didn't have a shiny, perfect life.
Yeah.
But actually the opposite is true,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That you're bringing glory to Christ by showing my life is a mess. And Jesus.
Yeah.
I think people are afraid to say, but I don't want to portray it like, well, you have Jesus and you're still a mess.
Yeah.
So what difference does Jesus make?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
It's like everything.
It's a balance.
Right. Right. It's yeah. everything. Right.
It's like, I mean,
so here's the
yes.
thing. Because yeah. you have to respond with, yeah, let's be real. Your life is a mess too.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's nobody whose life isn't a mess.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you why Jesus makes
it with
a
Jesus,
difference.
Not without it, Jesus, right.
Yeah, it's not like Jesus fixes every. You don't. That's the prosperity gospel again. That and it's mm-hmm. it's not always material wealth. Sometimes it's emotional wealth mm-hmm. that people think, oh, Jesus is going to fix all my heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, eventually he kind of does,
right.
but not in the way that you think.
Right.
And so I think people have to see you living that out to really understand. And also I will say, if I'm just being honest and open, it's not up to me whether that's convincing enough. Mm-hmm. It's up to the Holy Spirit. He decides when and where that person is going to have the moment of understanding. And it's just my job to be real and honest.
I'm so glad we're going through the Old Testament and getting a chance to see how all of those books point us to Jesus and also how they really are so applicable to our lives today. We are a weekly Bible study like you will find in your local church. If you aren't involved in a study, we encourage you to find one. Make sure that they're teaching from the Bible in every situation. In Matthew 10, Jesus sent out his disciples to preach the word, saying, "Freely you have received, freely give." We take that command seriously here at Study with Friends, so we have created many resources for you to use, all at our website, studywithfriends.org. There you will find other studies, blog posts, and daily encouragement to help you in your walk with Christ. Just like those disciples who relied on the generosity of a host, we are also 100% donor supported. So if you are particularly blessed by one of the resources we work hard to provide, please consider a donation of any amount. A monthly partnership is especially helpful and no amount is too small. If you are happy to give it, we would be grateful and blessed to receive it. You can donate one time or become a monthly partner on our website, studywithfriends.org/donate. We also love to hear from you via email at info@studywithfriends.org. You can also connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to check us out on YouTube. And remember, you can always stream us on the go on your favorite streaming apps like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time when we study with friends.